Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins.
Just 30 years ago, most American workers were able to stop working in their early 60s, enjoy a long and comfortable retirement. But that brief golden age of retirement is now over. That's the way Alicia Minnell begins her latest book, which she describes as a little like Paul Revere's famous ride in 1775. She hopes it will raise the alarm.
What's changed is obvious. People are living longer. Social Security is providing less income, and defined pension plans have been replaced by 401ks with modest balances. But Minnell says that the scope of the problem is vast. Soon, millions of Americans will realize they're too old to work, haven't saved enough not to, and have few people to turn to for help.
Alicia Minnell is a former top economist at the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. She's also worked in the Clinton administration. Today, she's the director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College and the co-author of a new book, Falling Short, The Coming Retirement Crisis and What to Do About It. And Alicia Minnell, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Oh, delighted to be here.
Thank you for coming in. It's an important subject, and we want to invite our listeners to participate in this conversation. The golden age of retirement might be over, listeners, but are you still hoping to retire or not? Tell us your story, your plan, your hopes, your questions about retirement. You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So, Alicia, your book deals with some strategies for retirement, which we'll get to in a minute. But let's start with a description of, I guess, how dire things are. Lots of numbers, gloomy numbers. Let's talk about some of them. First, we're living longer, which means we'll spend more years in retirement. How much longer? I mean, how should we think about that?
So I think the two of you described the problem really well, that we have an increased need for retirement resources because people are living, you know, 5 years longer than they did 30 years ago. And at the same time, we are going to see high and rapidly rising health care costs, and we have very low returns on assets. So it means you need a big pile. So you need more. And at the same time we need more, we're going to get less because Social Security is going to provide less under current law, much less what's going to happen when they try to fix the financing problem. 401k plans could work well, but people in those plans approaching retirement have $111,000, which is not very much. People do not save outside of Social Security and 401k plans. And people don't have the one thing they do have, which is the equity in their house.
So let's talk about those 401ks first. As we mentioned, fewer Americans than once upon a time can count on those defined pensions, so more and more are relying on 401ks. You mentioned $111,000. What is that figure? That's the average family, how much they have in a 401k?
So it's the average household approaching retirement, age 55 to 64. It's a household, not an individual. And it includes not only their 401k money, but their money in individual retirement accounts, because a lot of money is rolled over. So you add those things together, and the typical household that has a 401k, that's the amount they have.
And how does that compare to what they need or what they should be?
Oh, so they probably need 5 or 6 times that amount.
Right. Now, conflicting assessments about how bad things are nationwide. Some estimates, BC, your office puts out one of them that more than half the country is unprepared to retire. The RAND Corporation says about 30%. In either case, polls suggest that this is consistently among our top worries, right?
Yeah, I think AARP had a poll that people said they were more worried about outliving their money than dying.
Yeah, it's a real problem. So why are Americans so bad about saving?
So Americans do not make individual decisions about savings. They rely on institutions. So they rely on saving through Social Security. They rely on saving through employer-sponsored plans. Social Security, for a variety of reasons that we can talk about, is going to provide less. And we've had this shift from an old-fashioned pension plan where you didn't have to think about anything and you didn't have to take any risks and you got the money paid out in retirement to these, you know, roll-your-own 401k plans, which are hard for people.
Yeah, and tell me more about that, because one of the things I'm curious about is when it comes to 401k, I mean, we're really talking about depending on the marketplace. I mean, depending on the markets. And as we saw in 2008, a lot of people lost a huge amount of money, and that was particularly hard for people who are right on the edge of retiring. So I'm curious, do we have confidence that this system is even going to work in the long term, depending on, you know, volatile markets for our retirement?
So I think even if the 401k system worked as well as it could, and it's far from that, then you still have all the risks falling on the individuals in the United States. I think the thinking among people who are worried about pension plans, public and private, is thinking of arrangements where there's some risk sharing. So employers bear some of the risk and employees bear some of the risk. But if we could at least get the piles in these accounts up to some minimum amount, then maybe, and some sensible investing patterns, then people would not be so much at risk themselves.
All right. So we're going to talk about some sensible investing patterns in a moment. But another piece of the retirement puzzle, of course, is Social Security. What do we need to understand about that?
Social Security is the backbone of our retirement system. It is a wonderful system. It provides sizable benefits, meaningful benefits that are indexed for inflation that continued for as long as the individual works, individual lives. This system is going to provide less under current law because we're raising the so-called full retirement age from 65 to 67, which means benefits at any age are sort of actuarially reduced by more. And the Medicare premiums are taken out of this check before the check goes in the mail. And these benefits are going to be increasingly taxed under the personal income tax system because there are thresholds there and more families are going to rise above it. So for a host of reasons, the amount you get from Social Security is going to be less relative to your earnings in the future than it is has been in the past.
And so, of course, one of the, and this sort of gets down to sort of one of your fundamental suggestions about people living longer, it means they're going to have to work longer, probably. And so you write here about one of Social Security's great deals, and that is working longer to claim the benefits can work out pretty well, right?
It does, indeed. I think it's probably the most powerful thing you can do. Your benefit at age 70 is 76% higher than your benefit at 62. So that's your monthly benefit. And as I said, this is terrific income. So you want to get as much of this income as possible. And even if you can't work that long for some reason, you want to use some other resources to support yourself and at least delay claiming as long as you can.
I see. All right. Well, let's get a couple of calls in. We're talking to Alicia Monell. She's the co-author of Falling Short, The Coming Retirement Crisis and What to Do About It. You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. Let's go to Paul, who's calling from Danvers. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Yeah, I'm from Danvers. Everything you're speaking to me about or speaking is to my heart. I was brought up in a family. My father, my mother grew up through the Depression. They saved. They were conservative. And in many respects, that kind of grew on me when I was 25, I guess, first really gainfully employed. I put as much towards whatever savings as I could. When 401k started, I filled those things up. I'm not a great investor, but consistent savings, I mean, I'm 60 years old, but I think I'm getting to a point where I'm ready to retire. But I'm also at a point where I'm saying to myself, gee, I saved all my life, I worked all my life. But genetically, I think I am predisposed to maybe die at about 95. And I'm still worried about, you know, whether I'll have enough money. And I got a pension, a 401k, Roth.
So, Paul, it sounds like, do you have a particular question for Alicia Monell?
How much is enough?
There it is, Alicia. So all of America wants to know.
So I need one key point of information. That's when are you going to die? And once you tell me that, then I can figure out the rest. But it sounds like you're in very good shape. Since you have some resources, what I would do if I were you, I would use those resources to live on and then claim your Social Security benefit at 70.
All right, Paul, thanks so much for the call. Let me ask you about, you were talking about sensible investment patterns, and when it comes to 401k, you write in the book about something, this idea about making contributions automatic. A lot of companies do that already. How does that work and how does it help?
So it's a very powerful lever that the behavioral economists have pointed out to us, and that is if you have a default that says you're in the plan unless you call the HR office and say, I don't want to participate, right, most people who are put in stay. And so you just see dramatically different participation rates in firms that have automatic enrollment and firms that don't. But if you automatically enroll people at, let's say, a 3% contribution rate, and you don't do anything additional, you could actually hurt them because they will also stay at a 3% contribution rate. So integral part of making these plans automatic is also having that default rate increase from 3% to 4% to 5%, et cetera.
I see.
And so you need to combine the two.
So how common is that? In other words, do most companies do that?
No, unfortunately, only about half. There was legislation passed in 2006 that was supposed to encourage companies to do it. I think we've seen all we're going to get through sort of incentives. This is the time now to change the law and say, if you want to be a 401k, then you have to have these automatic provisions.
All right. Let's go to Bill, who's calling from Arlington. Hi, Bill. You're on the air.
Hi. This is Bill in Arlington.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill. Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
My question is basically, I turned 65 in February. The traditional thinking is the mix of stocks, bonds, and cash should favor bonds at that point. But with the author's suggestion that we are living longer lives, I feel like I need to stay in stocks, 65% say is a number, just because I may run out.
Bill, it's a great question.
Might be.
Yeah, so Bill's talking about investing a little more aggressively for a little bit longer.
So the economic theory is that when you're young, you have a lot of human capital ahead of you, all your wages that you're going to earn, and that's sort of like a bond-like investment. And so you should put a lot of money into stocks, and as you age, your human capital declines, and so you should put less in. Less doesn't mean zero, and the fact that you have a good chance of living 25 or 30 years means that you don't want to be all in fixed income. So the idea of keeping some stocks seems very sensible.
Bill, thanks for that call. One of the sort of big questions, of course, in your thinking about working longer is it's easy to say that we all need to work longer, but working longer isn't always so simple, right? I mean, it requires a certain kind of planning and thinking in ways that we perhaps haven't done up until this point.
That's exactly right. But we have to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of the arithmetic. We're trying to support ourselves in many cases, for 30 years in retirement on the money we saved over a 40-year work life at the same time that we were sort of raising children and buying a home and doing all this kind of stuff. The arithmetic doesn't work. And we're not saying that you have to work until you're 90. All we're saying is that if you can get closer to 70 rather than early 60s, you will be so much better off. And a lot of us can do it, but there are a lot who can't. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't get all the folks who can't do it to do it.
You know, you've worked in the Clinton administration. You worked for the Fed. I mean, are you seeing in terms of key sort of policy directions and policy decisions and the discussion in Washington, for example, taking this problem seriously? How do you feel about that?
The answer to your question is no, I don't. I mean, people are not focused on retirement at all. It's very interesting where you do see some action is at the state level. California, for instance, is trying to set up a plan for employees in its state who work for employers who don't provide any plan. I think there's action in Connecticut. There's about 12 states that are thinking of doing something. So maybe that's where we're going to have to look for initiatives at this point.
In about the minute or so that we have left, I want to talk to you about real estate and people sort of counting on their houses as a key part of their savings. What are the important measures to think about there?
So the key fact is that for most middle income people, their house is their biggest asset.
Right.
And as I said before, the way people save is through automatic saving mechanisms, and paying off your mortgage is one of those mechanisms. So the question is, should they be tapping this equity in retirement? And in the past, people have not wanted to do it. I mean, first of all, you've paid off your mortgage over your lifetime, and you want to leave your house to your kids. But I think the time has come when people are going to need to use their housing equity to supplement their other sources of income if they're going to have a decent retirement.
Right. And so the way that we would do that is through something called a reverse mortgage,
but
right?
You can do it two ways. You can do it by, actually, if you have a big house, you can sell your big house and move to a smaller house, take out some money, reduce your expenses. Or if you really like your house that you're living in and you want to continue living there, a reverse mortgage is a mechanism for doing it.
Okay. Now, one last question. A lot of people who are getting ready for retirement also have kids, or thinking about retirement, also have kids thinking about college. So this is a huge juggling act and a huge challenge.
And it's a problem no matter how you look at it. So yeah. You either have people approaching retirement who feel like they need to help out kids with college, or you're going to have kids out there taking out a lot of student loans. And we're very worried about new people entering the workforce because they have so many responsibilities and have entered such a weak labor market that they're going to be late starting all this saving for retirement. So educational expenses are a really big item, as you say.
All right. Well, there's the challenge, and there's some ideas about how to confront it from Alicia Munnell. She's the director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College and the co-author of a new book, Falling Short, The Coming Retirement Crisis and What to Do About It. Alicia Munnell, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, we remember the father of the home video game system. I'm Anthony Brooks with Lisa Mullins. This is Radio Boston.